Hi there, my name is Mary Killalea. Welcome to the To Be Bolder podcast, providing career insights for the next generation of women in business and tech. To Be Bolder was created out of my love for technology and marketing, my desire to bring together like-minded women, and my hope to be a great role model and source of inspiration for my two girls and other young women like you, encouraging you guys to show up and to be bolder and to know that anything you guys dream of, it's totally possible. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation.
Hi, thanks for tuning in. Today's guest is Tanya Jenka, also known as She Hacks Purple. Tanya is currently the Director of Developer Relations and Community at Bright Security. She is the author of Alice and Bob Learn Application Security and also the founder of We Hack Purple, an online learning academy, community, and weekly podcast that revolves around teaching everyone to create secure software. Tanya has been coding and working in IT for over 20 years, won numerous awards, and has been everywhere from startups to public service to tech giants like Microsoft, Adobe, and Nokia. Tanya has worn many hats: startup founder, pen tester, chief information security officer, AppSec engineer, and software developer. She is an award-winning public speaker, active blogger, and streamer, and has delivered hundreds of talks and training around the world. She values diversity, inclusion, and kindness, which is right up my alley. So I am delighted, delighted to have you on the show today, Tanya. Thank you for joining.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so the bio is so interesting to me, especially just security is so relevant to every business. Let's talk about your career journey. Can you tell us kind of how you got to where you are today?
I think that I had a very different start than a lot of little girls, where when I think I was maybe 10 and my uncle made a computer for us, and this was back when computers were quite expensive, and he taught it to say our names. So it'd say, "Hi, my name is Mikey. Hello, Tanya." And we found that awesome. And then when I was a teenager, I started programming. And then basically the moment I turned 18 years old, I started working at a tech company. Mm-hmm. And I told my family, "I want to take computer science in college." They're like, "What else would you take? All your uncles are computer scientists. Both your aunts are computer scientists. Your mom's a mathematician, chemist. Your dad's a technologist. What would you take if you didn't take computer science?" And then I started my first company when I was 23, which did not go that well, but I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And so basically I've been doing this for as long as I have known how to do anything. So I don't think that normal little girls in the 80s were like, "You're going to be a good little software developer when you grow up, sweetie."
No, but it's worked out beautifully for you.
Yeah, it really did.
That is so interesting. Tell us about your role right now with Bright Security.
Okay, so I founded my own company in February 2020, right? Best timing ever. And it was called We Hack Purple, and we got acquired this year by Bright Security. Yeah.
Okay. Congratulations. Yeah.
And so basically I run We Hack Purple on behalf of Bright, and then I run developer relations on behalf of Bright. So We Hack Purple is this giant online community for people to learn about securing software and other areas of security, but I am obsessed with AppSec, so it's really heavily focused there. And then we have all these courses and trainings and events and stuff. And so I run all of that. And then I also speak at conferences on behalf of Bright, and I create a ton of content on behalf of Bright. And then I also give them product feedback. Some people call it nagging. I call it product feedback. But yeah, it's been really fun so far. And I have to say, I've talked to a lot of friends who have had other companies acquire them. And they're like, "Oh, they're really nice to you all the time." I'm like, "Yeah, they're always nice." Like a few months ago, I was at a conference and I wrote a book. And I don't know if you know, but my book's heavy. And I had 40 books I had to carry. And the CEO actually like ended a meeting and drove across town and carried the book.
Oh, that is very good supportive. Yeah.
I'm like, "They're really, really nice to me." And they're like, "Well, that's not always the case when you get acquired. So you should count yourself very lucky." And I do.
Oh, that's awesome. So you mentioned you're obsessed with AppSec.
Yes.
Tell me why you're so obsessed with that.
Okay. So I was a software developer forever. So I was programming for a few years before I got my first job. And then for 17 years, I did software development and I like did all sorts of different programming jobs that I really liked. And then I also was a professional musician. So I would play in bars all over town. So I would play songs, sing and play my guitar. And then eventually I learned drums. And briefly I did comedy because I was like, how can I make less money than music? Right? And so then I met this guy at my office. And I'm very, very extroverted and I just have to make friends with everyone. And I met this guy and he was a penetration tester. So he did security testing and I made the apps, right? And I was like, you're in a band? He's like, you're in a band? I'm like, let's be friends. And he's like, yes. And then he kept trying to convince me to join security. And I was like, no, security's lame, man. I make something out of nothing all day long. I just create these amazing things. And I make my clients so happy and that really feeds my soul. And he's like, no, you'd be so good at security. He's like, I bet he was joking. Like, he's like, it'll be scorched earth when you're done. I'm like, I don't want to destroy. I want to create. But then he kept showing me cool stuff. Uh-huh. And then he introduced me, like unbeknownst to me, he introduced me to like at least half of the security people in Ottawa, like bit by bit. And I ran this little lunch and learn program for my dev team. And so I had like 8 different security topics. And each one I was like, I must learn how to do this. And I became more and more curious. And after a year and a half of him just hassling me, I was like, fine, I will allow you to mentor me, which is the exact opposite way that every other person gets security. Yeah. And I joined the local community called OWASP and their leader, his name's Sharif Kusa, and we're still friends to this day. And very quickly, he's like, you are a leader, Tanya, like whether you mean to or not, you're a leader. So why don't we lead this together? And he let me, you know, select a lot of the topics that we would cover so I could learn them. And he mentored me quite a bit and still does to this day because he runs his own business. He's very successful. And so then I stumbled into this giant community that's international called OWASP, so the Open Web Application Security Project. And I started an open source project with this friend named Nicole. And I remember we met on the internet because she had made this demo and it was broken. And I just sent this email out into the void of all the leaders across the planet. So like 700 people, I'm like, hey, this is down and I'm supposed to be giving a demo for work in 2 hours. Does anyone know what happened? And she wrote back and said, try now, which is the most software developer thing to ever do. And I'm like, what did you do? She's like, nothing. And then it worked. And then I ended up meeting her in person and we became friends. And one day she's like, do you want to start an open source project with me? And I was like, you hadn't yet. Hello. And like, she's amazing. And I just kept meeting more and more amazing human beings through this just amazing community. So I think there's 350 chapters around the world. Wow. Yeah. And they're just, I can't tell you like how welcoming they were and just every person wanting to help. And so I just became more and more fascinated by like, why can't we solve this problem? And then, you know, I was a penetration tester at first, but that's very solo type of work. And it's very good work. It's very important work, but I'm a social butterfly.
Right.
And I found it a little lonely. And I was like, really, I just like hanging out with other devs. And so AppSec is where you help with all the security stuff. And sometimes you do testing, but sometimes you do teaching. And sometimes you just meet and brainstorm. And sometimes you are, you know, analyzing and drawing pictures and just helping to solve problems. And I was like, this feeds my social butterfly-ness and also my curiosity for security and also how I love helping. And so that became the best place for me. I didn't even know it was a job. Like when you go to school, they don't tell you all this stuff exists, right? And it turns out it's a job and it's a job that pays well, like just as much or even maybe more as a software developer. So I was like, oh, wow, this is awesome.
This is a fantastic conversation. And all the things that you're bringing up are so relevant to the listeners because you're demonstrating how, you know, your personality is infectious, which I just love this. But you're also saying like you chose this path because it meets my values and my personality and I can excel naturally in it. And I think to your point, so many of careers, so many roles within companies aren't exposed properly to young women who are interested in tech. They think, oh, I'm going to be in a dark room, or oh, I'm going to be siloed, or it's not for me, or there's just men in this, you know. So help break down some more myths, if you will.
Yeah, like when I wanted, so this guy was my first professional mentor in security. I thought there were only three jobs in security. And I thought one was that guy that changes the firewall rules, that's always grouchy when I ask him for stuff. There's the penetration tester who seems really cool because he has an earring and he has like a snake tattooed on his arm. And he like kind of knows some kung fu with the computer. I'm like, that guy's pretty cool. And then there's the grouchy dude where that does like governance, compliance, and risk, who's always trying to make me do a lot of paperwork and fill out checklists. And when I ask for help, says, you should know. And I was like, well, I don't think I'm really meant to be a firewall person. And, you know, those checklists aren't really doing it for me. So I'm like, I guess I'm the guy with the snake tattoo on his arm. I guess that's me. I used to be in punk bands. I have a bunch of tattoos. I'm like, I guess that's where I fit into security. But then I discovered, like, I had no idea, Mary. So I started a podcast called the We Hack Purple podcast. And for the first year, we have 50 episodes, one per week with a different person, because there's that many jobs in information security.
It's fantastic. I had no idea.
Right. And there are, and first of all, I've learned that, you know, the GRC checklist people are actually pretty frustrated with everyone else. and I learned a lot more about what they do and how they offer value. And we interviewed someone where she actually made me really excited about that. I learned about, basically, there's just so many different jobs, like investigating incidents, you know, teaching software developers how to fix bugs. Like there's just so many different jobs. And so I was really passionate about showing everyone, because I didn't know. And I basically spent, you know, a year training myself, then another year and a half in the role that I wasn't right for me. And I wasn't right for them. Like I remember my boss, like poor Alfred. He'd be like, why are you taking 14 days to do a pen test? Like everyone else can do it in 10. And I'm like, oh, well, because we needed to do a threat model. And then I helped them fix this bug. And he's like, that's not your job, Tanya. Stop that. And like, I feel like I might've been a difficult employee, like not on purpose, not that I was rude or disrespectful, but I'm like, they need me.
Right, right. Best of intentions.
Right. And so one day someone's like, okay, so Tanya, the job you keep doing is called AppSec. You know, lots of people, and it's a full-time job. It's not usually a consulting job. And so you can stay the whole time and fix the whole thing. Cause I had trouble letting go when our clients were done. And he's like, please stop doing that. And that's totally his, like, he was, just to be clear, the problem wasn't him. It was
me. Yeah. Well, that, you know, that's so good that you're saying this though, because you were doing a job that you didn't even know existed. And I love that you are aligned and so passionate about it. It makes, thank you for explaining that to me. So obviously a huge success in your life, and it takes career resilience. Let's talk about career resilience and what it means to you.
I've had a lot of very interesting things in my career compared to some people. Like I've had a lot of different types of jobs and had the opportunity to work in public sector, private sector, startups, and then like giant, huge companies like Microsoft. I think I've had a lot of opportunity. And honestly, I think a lot of it is because I'm very, very extroverted and I love human beings. And so, you know, I have no nervousness at all about just like calling one of my old colleagues from Microsoft or the government or wherever and saying, I'm having this like super weird technical problem. And like of all the people I've ever met, I feel like you can feel my pain. And there's lots of people where they could call me, but they don't, because they're not that extroverted type of person. Right. Not that they should not call, but they feel they shouldn't call. And so I feel like some of my resilience has come just because I'm social. So if I've worked somewhere and been unhappy, because I have had some instances where I'm like, this is not the place for me. Nope. And so being able to just make a bunch of phone calls and have a bunch of job offers is not something most people can have. And I am on year 26, I guess now. I just passed my 25 year anniversary in July of being in tech, which is exciting.
Yes.
But most people don't have a resume that long as well. Right. I also feel like, so I was a musical performer, like I said, for a very long time. And so this might sound odd, but I started doing public speaking and everyone's like, well, of course you would be good at it. I'm like, no, I'm going to die of a heart attack. I'm so nervous. I will die. And I didn't, clearly. But the person that I was leading the OWASP chapter with, his name's Sharif. I was like, why don't we ever have any women present? He's like, Tanya, I've invited tons. They all say no. I'm like, why? And he's like, do you want to speak? I was like, no. And he's like, answer your own question, Missy.
Yeah.
And so him and a bunch of other people in my local community just kept encouraging me. And finally, I was like, okay, I'm going to do it. This is really scary. And they like let me practice on them. They helped go over my slides with me. And I presented at a meetup. And I thought I would die. I did not die. I presented at work, which was also very scary, because presenting in front of people who you really, really respect is so much more scary for me than strangers. Like speaking at the OWASP meetup, I'm like, all of you are my peers. I really care what you think. But if I go speak out of town at some conference where I don't know anyone, I'm like, well, I don't know any of you.
It's amazing what our mind does, isn't it?
Yeah. But then as I started doing more public speaking, I figured out I could get into a conference for free if I wrote a talk for it. And so I just started applying everywhere. I'm like, oh, that conference is awesome. I wish I could get a free ticket to that. And then I started writing a blog because a colleague double dared me, which sounds ridiculous, but he's that guy. And he's like, I dare you to start a blog. And I was like, no. And he's like, if you don't have 40 readers after 3 months, I'll buy you dinner. And I was like, well, Brock, it's on like. And then he was totally right. I had like 400 readers by then. And he's like, haha, you have a blog now, Tanya. But writing a blog and doing all of these talks opened so many doors for me that I was not expecting. Like the doors I wanted opened were that I get to go and sit and listen to all the other smart people at the conference. I'm like, I'm writing this blog. I'm going to learn more and research more by writing this blog. And then people would comment and I would learn more because they'd be like, oh, what about this? And I'm like, oh, what about that?
Yeah.
Right. And I was like, I'm going to learn for free. Ha ha. But then it turned out that turned into sort of my resume, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. No, the creator economy and like, learning through doing and the momentum that creates for you and your career is really astounding. And while you're doing it, you don't even know it's happening, but then you wake up one day and you go, oh my gosh, look at everything that I just did and all these new doors that are open because I just did what was really uncomfortable. But it's a fascinating domino effect, if you will.
Yeah. And also I think that some people learn very well by teaching something to someone else. And it turns out I'm one of those people. And I used to, when I was a software developer, I would always like mentor the co-op students. And I was always mentor the junior because I enjoy that. And it makes me happy. And then my team will be awesome. Right. And so then people were like, well, will you mentor me in security? I'm like, me? I'm so new. And sometimes you don't even realize how far you've come, how quickly. And so people will ask me a question. And if I don't know the answer, I usually get really super excited about it. And then I'm like, well, I have to write a blog post now. It's on.
What do you tell other women who have a hard time finding their voice and finding their voice to advocate for themselves and take ownership and claim responsibility for successful projects, or they use the we when it's really them? You know, what kind of advice do you have for women like that?
So in some cases, I am a little bad for always saying we, because I'm constantly trying to give the people below me credit. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of managers are like, my team did this and I did that. And I'm always trying to make my juniors shine. Mm-hmm. But I tend to tell women, like, if you can gather up your confidence in a safer place, then you'll feel more confident in less safe places. So for instance, I'm part of this group called the Forte Group, and it's a private group for women CEOs and CISOs. And I'll tell them, present here first, because all of us think you're awesome already. All of us are going to give you positive feedback or highly constructive feedback. Like, hey, that was awesome. It could be even better if you did this, right? All of us are going to like your post on Twitter. All of us are going to, you know, introduce you or show off the thing that you did. Like, this article is amazing. Look at Olivia. Yeah. And so we really build each other up in this very positive way. And so when I started the We Hack Purple community, we have a code of conduct, and we intentionally try really, really hard to encourage first-time speakers. And yes, maybe only 6 or 10 people show up, but they'll be the nicest people you've ever met. And they'll say the nicest things, yeah, and it's very friendly and safe. And mm-hmm. so if you can be in a space that's very safe to start and build up your confidence, and then go to like a slightly less familiar space and move from there, then eventually you can speak in front of a whole audience. Mm-hmm. And the first time I spoke at a conference, one of my professional mentors had basically announced on Twitter, Tanya speaking at B-Sides Ottawa next year. And I was like, what? No, he's like, here, Tanya, you can do this. And so when I went to go on stage, I was so nervous. He actually came up on stage with me and just stood beside me the whole time. He just stood beside me and said nothing, because I was so afraid. Like, I'm so afraid. He's like, I'm not going anywhere. I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, I'll just stand here beside you, so you know you're safe. And I was just like, oh my God, you're so amazing. Wow. It's so awkward for him. He's like, I don't give a shit what other people think. And I was like, oh,
that's
wow.
Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then later, so my demo failed. And I was super embarrassed. And it turned out someone else had hacked that website that I was demoing on that morning and just brought it down. So it wasn't my fault, that it failed, but it doesn't matter, because I still look dumb. And then later that afternoon, another speaker insulted my talk during his talk. And the whole audience was angry with that speaker. It was like, she's doing her best, you big jerk. He came up to me and apologized later and was like, that was a misunderstanding. English is my second language. That's not what I meant. I'm so sorry. But people made it clear to him, like, insulting a first-time speaker, like, her demo failed, she was doing her best, like, that's not okay. Yes. And so he was propelled to apologize, which was really nice to see the community around that. And then the next year, they invited me back to speak again. And the following year, I was the keynote.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah. And I did befriend the person that said the bad thing about my talk eventually. And he swears that it was a language issue, and that's fine. And I'm totally willing to accept that. But I feel like if you can start, like if you have allies, like a person that stands beside you on stage awkwardly so that you don't have a meltdown, that's a pretty wonderful human being.
Absolutely. No, that is a gift. And I love your community that you're surrounding yourself, either from your, you know, organization with the women, but so much of what you're saying, I hope listeners are really taking in, because it's so important. And the vulnerability that you're willing to do each time to grow is so key. What has been the best career advice that you've received?
Okay. So I have this mentor named Kim. So I have a few mentors, and I wanted to start. So I was at Microsoft and I was like, this is awesome, right? Yeah. I got to work with some, let's face it, pretty absolutely astoundingly amazing human beings who are like super brilliant. And it was like, I'm getting paid well. I have lots of opportunity, right? But I was like, I really, really, really want to start my own business, but I'm afraid. And so we met in Toronto. And she has founded two of the really big security companies in Canada. She's a very successful person. And she's like, do you have a lot of like gambling debt or anything? And I was like, no. And she's like, do you have some lavish, expensive lifestyle you need to maintain? I was like, no, I like live in an apartment. I like mostly just like pile the money in the bank and don't know. I just retirement stuff. Like I'm not a spender. And she's like, do you have like a bunch of kids depending on you? And like, you're, you know, trying to put braces on them or something like big expense. And I was like, no. And she's like, she asked like a bunch of other questions like that. I'm like, no, she's like, okay, so there's nothing, there's no like financial reason that you can't just like basically not work for like a year or two if you want to. And I was like, yeah, I guess that'd be okay. And she's like, so you've got like basically an endless runway. I'm like, not forever, but yeah, it's, I got a pretty darn good runway. And she's like, so, okay, so what's the worst that could happen if you start your company? I'm like, what if I start a company and it fails and it's embarrassing? She's like, most startups fail. Lots of startups fail.
Yeah.
Do you think that everyone remembers my startups that failed? No, they remember my two awesome ones that are super successful, giant ass companies. That's what they remember. And I was like, oh, and she's like, worst case scenario, you start your company and it fails. She's like, and then you just find an extremely high paying job. She's like, do you understand how well known you are? She's like, Tanya, if you tweeted, I'm looking for a job on Twitter, Twitter would break. And I was like, that's not true. And she's like, seriously, she's like, what are you afraid of? And I was just like, you know, like, what if I make mistakes? She's like, everyone does. If you don't make any mistakes, literally, you must be a god. Everyone makes mistakes. I make mistakes. Like CEOs of giant companies, they make mistakes. She's like, the point is you learn from it and you do better next time. And you ask lots of smart people before you make a giant decision and take the best advice you can. And I was like, you know, so after this conversation, I'm like, I think I'm going to do it. And she's like, awesome. And then she like snaps her fingers. She's like, champagne. And people came across champagne in like the middle of the day. I had champagne with him. And it was pretty amazing. And she's like, to your new company. And I was like, oh my God, I'm going to cry. You're just, she's so amazing as a human being. I was just like, oh my gosh.
I love that.
Yeah.
When you think about today's career or market for women in tech and all the jobs that aren't even around right now because the way technology is advancing and innovation is happening, what would you advise people to start to learn or educate themselves or how can they future-proof themselves, I guess?
So cybersecurity is not going away. Every year it's getting bigger and bigger. I did a bunch of research in 2020 because I was pitching, not investors, I was part of like this contest for Canada thing or whatever. But in 2020, $6 billion was lost to cyber crime that we're aware of, right? Mm-hmm. Tons of it's not even reported. It's probably $7 or $8 billion, right? And then the cybersecurity industry is also billions of dollars. I think it's $2 billion this year or something. It's growing and growing and growing. And so as much as like I would love to promise everyone, don't worry, I'm going to fix it this year, I've learned that's not true, even if my intention is that. And so I think there's going to be jobs in all areas of cybersecurity for a very long time. I also think that there's going to be jobs in data science, which I find utterly fascinating, in machine learning, in artificial intelligence. So when I say artificial intelligence, I don't mean Skynet's going to take over. I mean, teaching computers to be slightly smarter so that they serve ads that aren't like, what is this? Like whenever people are like, AI is going to take over. I'm like, yeah, you should see the ads they serve me. Trust me, they're a long way off. And so I feel like there's going to be a lot of jobs and there's always going to be people needed to program those things. No matter what, there's going to be people that need to be able to be patient and kind and help people troubleshoot things. And I think that just tech is exploding. I think it's going to explode for a long time, but especially the jobs where you're creating something new. Mm. I think that's going to be something exciting for a very long time. If you're customizing things for someone, I think that's going to be a role where people are constantly trying to hire people. And if you have decent social skills and then you have decent technical skills, you can work anywhere. If you have excellent social skills and or excellent technical skills. Like people will, I used to joke when I left Microsoft, I was like, yeah, someone's going to come up with a white van and kidnap me and throw me in. And they're just going to want me to secure their apps because it's so hard to hire people that know how to do this. And so I see people switching from all sorts of different careers. And I know that we're still going to need healthcare workers and all of that, but I know tech the best. So that is why I'm advising on the topic I know, but I don't think we're going to run out of tech jobs anytime soon.
No. Do you think people need to leave companies in order to increase wages? And I know that seems like a weird question, but
no, it's not a weird question.
It kind of seems to be the case because inner company roles or moves don't tend to see that same pace fight.
Yep.
Would you agree?
Yes. Except for quite recently, every single time I've had a promotion, it's because I've changed companies. Mm-hmm. Because why would they pay me more to do what they've already tricked me into doing?
Yeah.
a lot of places I've worked, I just end up taking on more and more because I know it needs to get done. Mm-hmm. And one day I'm just like, you know what? I'm actually doing that whole job and why aren't I getting paid for it? And then it's on my resume and then someone offers me it and I'm like, either you promote me or I'm leaving. And they're like, well, I'm like, bye. Too slow.
Yeah.
I feel like as well that women are promoted slower. Like many times, I remember I joined the Canadian government and I'd already worked in industry 8 years. Right. And I had to join at level one and I couldn't speak French. And in Canada, bilingualism is a really big deal in the government. So that closed some jobs to me. But I remember I was speaking. So there were two men of color. Every single other programmer was a man. And then there's me. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to one of the men of color and I'm like, have you noticed you and I are the only level ones and everyone else is level two? And he's like, well, you know, this and that, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I should have been promoted a long time ago. That's what's going on. He's like, you know, you're so overqualified. I'm like, no, I wasn't promoted when I should have been. That's what's happening. Right. Mm-hmm. And so each job they'd be like, you're so overqualified. I'm like, no, I'm underpromoted. Mm-hmm. It's inappropriate that I have like this many level years of experience and haven't been promoted. You're getting a super steal of a deal.
Right.
And then I leave and then they're like, why are you leaving? And I'm like, bye-bye. Don't let the door hit your butt on the way out. And in some places, like, I don't think that they're like, hey, she's a woman. Let's promote her later. I think that part of it is like, maybe I'm not demanding it the way a man would. Maybe I'm not demanding the same things that a man would. I've had situations where they're like, well, we're going to promote you, but not give you the title, or we're going to promote you and give you the title, but not the pay. I'm like, oh, that's unattractive. Right. Yeah. And even just knowing the number. So I got offered a contract to do something and I'm not going to say what the thing is, because it will be very clear which giant company this was with, but they also hired a white male that I know very well. And he happens to be one of my mentors. So I wrote him and I was like, oh, I'm being offered a contract to do this. And he's like, yeah, I know. I might've recommended you. And I was like, okay. And I'm like, how much do I ask for? And he's like, they put into my contract that I'm legally not allowed telling anyone how much I asked for. And I was like, okay. He's like, ask for the moon. And I was like, so I asked for $40,000 and they're like, sure, sign here. And I was like, oh, crap. And clearly there it should have been at least double that. Mm-hmm. Right. And, but at first, cause I didn't know what number to say. I was like, I want to get paid what he's getting paid. And they're like, he's more famous than you. I'm like, he's more famous with this group. I'm more famous with that group. Right. We have different things we offer. And I also have this, I'm a best-selling author. I'm all these other things that he's not. And they're like, we're not paying you what he's getting paid. And they're like, you don't even know what he's getting paid. I'm like, I'm pretty sure it's good. And they're like, no, you have to name a number. And I had no idea. And when they immediately agreed and they sent the contract like 2 seconds later, I was like, I have failed. Yeah. I have asked way, 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 way too little. This was a mistake. And I did the contract and that's fine. And $40,000 is still quite a lot of money in my opinion. But I'm pretty sure that he had like quadruple that at least. Mm-hmm. And I, for the exact same thing. And I'm just like, oh man, it sucks.
Yeah. And then that's one of those learning lessons. And I love that you're asking others for like, what should I ask for? Because I think women don't tend to do that enough. I think today's there's resources so much more readily available to us than in the past.
Yeah. I asked a bunch of women and all of them are like, you should ask 10, you should ask 12, you should ask 15. And then I asked a bunch of men and they're like, ask 100, ask 200.
Oh my
and
gosh.
I know. And then one of the guys was like, what's the lowest you'd be willing to do it for? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, if it's not 20, it's not even worth doing. It's a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And he's like, okay, double that, ask for that. And I was like, okay, I'll ask for 40. And I assumed they would try to bargain. And they're like, where do we sign?
Yeah.
And, but like all the women, so I was telling some of the women, I'm thinking of asking 40, and they all discouraged me across the board. They're like, that's too much. Oh my God. They're not going to take you, Tanya.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And these are like people who really like me a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like these are people who are offering the best advice they had. And so
yeah.
I got way more than any of the other women would have, but way less than all of the men I asked. And I'm like, wow, this is a really weird place.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. If you were starting out in tech today, is there anything you would do differently?
Oh, yeah, I probably would have started speaking at conferences earlier because I didn't know I would love it.
Mm-hmm.
It brings me great joy. Like I like developing content. I like sharing ideas. And I absolutely love the part at the end where people ask really super smart questions and make me think hard. And also really like people. So it's like this opportunity for me to meet so many human beings that I wouldn't have the chance to meet. So I probably would have started giving talks almost right away. Because yeah, the amount of joy that it has brought me, is just, it's almost like playing music. Except like, you know, you probably shouldn't be drunk when you do it. like playing music in a bar is quite different.
Yes.
Or like a punk festival or something like that, you know, where people have never had a mosh pit at one of my talks so far.
So far.
No one, people have not got up and like slow danced together or anything like that, but that's okay. You know, I can still shoot for these goals. But I feel like I didn't know this was a thing that could make me so happy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that I would learn so much. Because even if I speak at a meetup, you know, I sit and I watch the other speaker and maybe I wouldn't have gone to that meetup.
Right.
And then I see this other person's point of view and learn a new thing. And I'm like, well, this is awesome.
Speaking of awesome, let's talk about your book, Alice and Bob Learn Application Security. Tell me about it. Tell me about the idea and, you know, like what can someone learn by picking up the book?
So I started writing a blog because of Brock daring me.
Mm-hmm.
And Brock, if you hear this, you're right. I'm wrong. basically people start writing me and they're like, you should write a book. Like I'm a publisher. Are you interested? And I was like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how to write a book. And they're like, oh, it looks like you know what you're doing. I'm like, no. And I wrote like this long blog series based off of a talk I gave. And I got tons of wonderful feedback. And this one guy named Dominique, who became my technical editor for that book, he would read everyone and then he would critique it. He'd be like, well, Tanya, there's this one nuance you missed or there's this one thing. And I was like, oh, man, like you're making me a way better writer. And so this one company wrote me called Wiley and they're my publisher now. And this guy named Jim wrote me and he's like, if you could write a book for yourself, the book you wish you had, because when I started application security, there was no book about AppSec. There wasn't one you could read. There wasn't a course you could take. There wasn't like, there were a few blogs by a few awesome humans, but there was nothing like I take this learning and I am an AppSec engineer. It was really ragtag all over the place. And he's like, write the book for yourself. And so I've always used Alice and Bob from the beginning of security because they were the examples used to explain encryption to normal people back in 1978. They're like, Alice wants to tell Bob a secret. How can she do that and make sure no one else can know? And so they would use those to explain. So whenever I would explain anything, I'd be like, it's not Alice's fault. There was a safeguard missing. And I always used those names because people who are my age and older tend to know who they are. Mm-hmm. And there's kind of like a secret little inside joke. And so then when I went to go write a book. I was like, I don't know if this is crazy, but I'm thinking of writing Alice and Bob Learn Application Security. And he's like, I love it. And I'm like, but I want to have stories in the book. I'm learning disabled. I'm dyslexic. And I hate textbooks. I hate them because they're really, really hard to read because I'm dyslexic, but I want all that darn knowledge in my head. Yeah. So I learned French as an adult because I worked in the public service. And so I spent 2 years in night school and then several months full time at a special school for dyslexic adults. And they taught me that there's 21 different ways that people learn and the ones that were right for me and how to teach myself things. And they're like, when adults get older, the longer they've been out of the learning phase, they forget how to learn. And so when I designed my teachings, I was always like, I'm going to tell a story. I'm going to show some code. I'm going to explain the principle. And then I'm going to give an example. And when I do that, everyone gets it. Like there's no one that's like, I read this whole book and I learned nothing. And so I was like, I want my book to be weird. Is that okay? And they're like, yeah, that's cool with us. And so, so for 1 year, I kind of researched what I wanted to be in it. And Wiley and I were like, we're both on the same page. They're like, go. And so I foolishly started my startup and wrote my book at the same time, which just to be clear is dumb. I made my significant other make me promise not to do that again. I get to write a book or start a company each year. That's it. Chanella, both. And I've just had person after person tell me that it was easy to read and understand. And that was, if that makes sense, my absolute number one goal. And people have told me that's enjoyable. They're like, I never thought I would read a textbook and actually laugh out loud. And so I've actually recently started writing my next book, which is called Alice and Bob Learn Secure Coding. And so I've already written chapter one and I've had the weirdest trouble attracting a technical editor. I put like a comment out saying that I'm looking for one and I've had close to 100 people offer. And then unfortunately they're all awesome. And so I'm very, very, very grateful and lucky to be like, oh my gosh, how do I choose? All of you are amazing. So I've narrowed it down to, I think like 6 or 7 now. And I've hired one so far. And so we're going to just go with 3, but I am so grateful to have people be interested in being part of this project. Cause I don't know if you know, Mary, you do not make money writing a book.
Yes.
And I personally sold 50% of the copies of my book myself because each student of my academy would get a book. And then I would, you know, go teach secure coding and they're like, send us 40 books. And so I actually sold at least half of all of my books. So my publisher is like, yeah, you're not a normal author. People don't usually actually personally sell them and personally mail hundreds of copies to people. I'm like, well, how will I get rid of these thousands of stickers I bought if I don't send books to people? Yeah, so there's not money in writing books. Just in case anyone was wondering, you should go become a Walmart greeter. You will make more money.
You know, that's funny because I'm taking a book writing class right now and they covered that in Publishing 101. It's like, do not come thinking you are going to get rich by writing a book. No, you can hear the crickets on the line of all the other students going, oh.
Yeah, but it opens doors.
Absolutely.
It opens thousands of doors. And this might sound really silly, but I reference my own book when I'm working all the time. I'm like, oh, cool, page 98. I know it's on there. Mm-hmm. And I can tell people like, okay, so go to chapter 6 and then read this section and then you're good. And now, so I told you my company was bought by Bright Security. So part of the deal was that I wanted my courses to become free for anyone. Because I had people offer to buy them, but they wanted to charge way more. And I was like, oh, no, I want the opposite of that. I want the information to be available for everyone. And so now I can say to people like, oh, okay, so go into the academy, take this course, do these sections, and then you'll be prepared for that. And it's just wonderful to be able to share with everyone and also be able to pay my bills. So thank you, Bright Security. Because you can't run a business and give everything away for free. You can't do that. I've learned.
What are you most proud of?
Helping people. Helping people has made me feel pretty darn fantastic. Like when someone writes me and they're like, I was a nurse working nights. And then I read your book, I took your courses, and I just got my first job doing AppSec. Stuff That's like cool. That just, it fills my cup all the way to the top every time.
That's amazing. What does To Be Bolder mean to you?
Oh, doing the thing that makes you scared, asking for the thing that you're worried you might not get. I remember there's this conference called Atlantic SecCon in Halifax that I really, really like. And I was sitting talking to this awesome human being named Mark. And he's like, next year, you should be the keynote. And I was like, oh my gosh, like maybe they'll ask me. You don't know. He's like, you're going to ask. And I was like, oh no, I'm not. And then he's like, Travis. And like, he's having you. He's like, come on over. He's like, Tanya, something to ask you. I'm like, I'm not. And I was like, so my talk went pretty well. He's like, there was a standing ovation, Tanya. It was pretty darn good. Yeah. And I was like, so I don't know if maybe he's like, Mark's like, you know, like egging me on, like elbowing me in the ribs. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know if you keynote for next year, but maybe. And he's like, oh my gosh, yes, you should be the keynote next year. I must have been. So I'm wearing a bright red shirt right now. You can hear me, but you can't see me. I was definitely the color of my shirt. And Travis is like, it's on. And I keynoted that conference next. Yes. So now I've learned like the worst thing they can say is no. And so sometimes I rate conferences. And they have the whole thing already set up and I'll write and I'll say like, hey, I know that the call for papers is closed, but if there's anyone that's sick or can't make it or anything, like, I just want you to know I'm really interested. I apologize that I did not apply on time, or I did apply and I got rejected, but I want you to know I really, really, really like your conference. And like, if there's a chance, and some of them have said yes, I've had some of them, they're like, you know, there's a panel we're making, you can come and be on the panel, or like this person, it turns out they're sick, they can't make it, so you can replace them. And I've just learned if you ask really nicely and humbly, so never tell someone that's rude,
right?
But if you just say the truth, like, I just really, really love your concert and I'm an idiot and I missed the call for papers by a week because the reminder on my calendar was the wrong day and I'm so sorry. And I actually wrote a whole thing just for this conference and I'm ridiculous and please for your consideration. And they say no a lot, but lots of them say yes. And I've just kind of learned if they say no, that's no right now, but it might be yes next year. It might be your, and it might never be yes. Like I apply to DEF CON and Black Hat every year. And every year they're like, you are not a badass hacker. You are a very cute defender. You don't belong here. And I'm like, maybe next year. And it's like, I don't care. I'm going to try again. And that's okay. And so I just learned not to take that stuff personally and do the thing you're afraid of anyway.
I love it. So in closing, I know diversity is a very important topic for you. What can we as women do to support each other and encourage each other in tech or careers?
So I remember another woman sent me a gif of this, and it's a woman holding the door for another woman. And then that woman holds the door for another woman. And she's like, this is how I try to live my life. And so when I started speaking at conferences in Microsoft, like they would pay for like these big, nice hotels. And so sometimes I would write other women and be like, do you want to share my hotel room with me so you can afford to go? And they'd be like, oh my gosh, yes, now I can go. And so I started talking to conferences and saying like, would you consider, like you're inviting me to be your keynote? And I say, yes, but as a personal favor to me, will you just consider accepting this lesser known woman on like a side stage? And so they started accepting more women. And so every time I'm on a podcast, I have this list of women who are lesser known than me. And I say like, for your consideration, here are women that I recommend who are amazing, but way less famous than I am. Like, just consider. And lots of them have gotten opportunities from that. And then when they're well-known enough, I'm like, you're off the list now. You've got this.
Right.
And so I just keep trying to hold the door for other women. And so sometimes in a meeting, I'll be like, hey, Amanda, you haven't said anything yet. You usually have great ideas. What are you thinking? And she looks at me like, Tanya.
Yeah.
But then she has all these awesome ideas.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so if we can try to share our privilege, does that make sense? So like,
absolutely.
If you have a certain level of success, like hold the door for someone else. And sometimes you don't even realize it. Like, I wrote this man that I'm friends with. I'm like, hey, you're giving this training at this conference. And he's like, yeah, do you want a seat? And I was like, you do, but can someone else sit in my seat? You know, there's this woman and she does all these awesome volunteer things and she's this amazing human. And we convinced her work to pay for a flight and she's going to stay in my hotel room. And then like, and she was telling me about your course and she follows you online. Mm-hmm. And he's like, done. Mm-hmm. And then that woman today is now rather famous with like 30,000 followers of her own. And I feel like we can hold the door for each other all the time and not like, I'm not losing anything.
Right.
By doing that. Just like I got asked finally to speak at DEF CON, like at a village, and I couldn't make it because I'd already switched my flight so many times. I was like, oh my gosh, my boss is going to murder me if I switch my flight again. And he has more late fees from me. So I can't do it. And I was like, you know, there's this other woman. And so then they ended up booking her. So I feel like it takes extra effort, but it's very, very satisfying to see someone else kind of spread their wings and soar.
100% agree. It is lovely meeting you. It is fantastic having you here and sharing your career path and story and encouraging words with other women. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you for making the space in general.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the episode today. It was really fun chatting with my guest. If you liked our show, please like it and share it with your friends. If you want to learn what we're up to, please go check out our website at 2bboulder.com. That's the number 2, little b, boulder.com.